All right. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome back to another awesome episode of Aquin's Roundtable Show and Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kabat Harrison, and I am here with another awesome, awesome interviewee for the Born to Lead docuseries. Yes, I said that right. The Born to Lead docuseries. So if you have been following me, I am currently interviewing these awesome entrepreneurs, business owners, coaches, consultants, influencers that are actually willing to join me in the studio and basically talk a little bit about themselves, basically some of their adversities or challenges that they've gone through while working their way to the top of their industry. And also sharing with you different tips and tools and strategies to help you be able to fine tune your leadership skills, right? To basically make you a better leader, whether you're in corporate America, whether this is to improve your business, how you show up in your business, how you lead your team, right? We all need leadership skills. Whether we think we do or not, there's always an area that we can improve in. There's some areas that we are very strong in and areas where we need some improvement, right? So without further ado, let me go ahead and read or introduce my guest to you. Her name is Julie. I'm going to let her pronounce her last name for you, but her name is Julie. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Julie before I bring her into the studio. So she is an expert and compelling speaker in the world of workplace reinvention and human potential. Julie, I'll let her pronounce her last name. Julie J is a Harvard Graduate School of Education, is a transformative force for guiding individuals and organizations through the complex world of change and growth that we find ourselves in today, helping the workforce world discover resilience, purpose, and productivity in equal measure. Having inspired audiences in her roles as a TEDx speaker, Harvard Division of Continuing Education instructor, author, transformation expert, she has educated, empowered, and inspired new and positive approaches to workforce performance and opportunity. As co-founder and president of the Academic Leadership Group, Julie delivers expertise and change-making insights in leadership coaching, navigating complexity, unlocking potential. In her impactful workplace programs, have empowered thousands of employees and managers, enhancing leadership skills and team dynamics. As a Harvard Division of Continuing Education instructor with a master's degree from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, she teaches authentic leadership and strengths-based development, inspiring lasting transformations. Julie also has received both the esteemed Harvard Hero Award and the Donna Elder Inspired Leader Award. Her leadership has inspired her book titled The Human Side of Changing Education, reflecting her commitment to fostering growth. With a remarkable blend of knowledge and experience, Julie dedicates herself to catalyzing greatness in every individual and organization with whom she engages. And last but not least, Julie, or born in Northern Ireland, Julie now lives in the greater Boston area with her husband, Jay, and their five-year-old, Izzy, her greatest teacher yet. Wow. I am so excited. I am so excited, Miss Julie. So Julie, let me bring you on in and please pronounce your last name for us.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited, Julie.
And my last name is Jungle Walla.
Jungawala. Okay. So just like it's spelled, pretty much. Okay.
Yes. Think jungle and then Walla at the end.
Okay.
My husband is Persian by way of India. So that makes four.
Okay.
A fun last name. Maybe I should start writing children's books with that name.
So, you know what, Julie? I mean, I know I read your bio, but go ahead and just let us know just a little bit about yourself. Anything we left off or, you know, anything you want to share with us further about who is Julie?
Sure. So, I guess 30,000 feet level, I've worked for, 25 years at this point in two fields, leadership development and organization development. So very much, individual and human development within the organizational context. And I worked for about a decade internally at Harvard Center for Workplace Development. That was a wonderful team and a great opportunity. And since 2013, have been self-employed. And then in 2019, joined my business partner, Jenny, to co-found the Academic Leadership Group. We co-founded the ALG on April Fool's Day, April 1st, 2019.
that is so cool. All right. Nice.
And one other thing that I think might be of interest, I was reading your bio, Jacqueline, and that interview where you talked about the influence that your dad has had on you. And I think we share that. My dad has always had a great influence on me, and dad was always encouraging me, supporting me to take my education as far as it would take me. And he would say that for two reasons. One, your education gives you choice. And secondly, nobody can take it away from you.
So, a multitude of times. No one can take it away from you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I have always been, I call myself a learning junkie. Never met a workshop I didn't like. So having the opportunity to work in this field for 25 years, definitely, I feel like a kid in a candy store being able to do this work.
Okay. So we're going to dive into the leadership aspect in just a little bit, but I want to kind of talk, I want to give Julie an opportunity to tell us a little bit about some of her, more recent research. So Julie, I understand that you and your partner, Jenny, business partner, have actually just completed a 3-year research project on human reinvention. So just if you could tell the audience just a little bit about what exactly does that mean? Why did you guys decide to do it? And what did you learn from doing it?
Sure. So the idea came out of a conversation that Jenny and I were having one day. You might have read, Jacqueline, some of the articles on AI, the need for the changing skills in the workforce, the need to upskill, reskill, de-skill. But nowhere in any of that conversation could we see any mention of the messy process of human change. You're a coach. You know that adult behavioral change is difficult. And that's essentially what we're asking a lot of human beings to do when it comes to AI, the changing world of work, and the multiple careers that we're likely to have throughout a lifetime. So Jenny and I broke out in heated agreement that we would like to bring some solid research, some solid ideas, frameworks to help organizations unpack this. So we interviewed over 50 people, and the questions we were asking ourselves was this whole process of reinvention, which is what it is, you're reinventing yourself as a human being. Are there stages or phases? It can be very messy, but are there predictable phases that we can expect? And what might be the skills, the abilities that help people work through that? And what are the actions? I'm very practical. I want a playbook. I want actions. So what are the actions that you might take? So whenever we distilled all of that data, we discovered four predictable stages, four actions, and four abilities. We didn't start out with the number four, but it just it distilled down to those numbers. And I've oftentimes said this phrase, that I believe every single person, no exceptions, on this planet has a curriculum inside of them, that they are here on this planet to live and to learn. However, we don't get the syllabus that goes along with it. We don't, even if you go through an education system and graduate the college level, for the most part, you don't get any hands-on assistance or help with that. Maybe some career guidance, but it's usually what job are you going for, as opposed to what interests you, what brings you alive, what might your purpose be, what are your values, those kind of, you know, more expansive questions. So bringing this syllabus, if you will, I come from an academic background. What's the syllabus that will help people, that's grounded in research and really practical at the same time? So we're just coming to the end of this work. I've just launched a white paper the week before Thanksgiving, and I can send you a copy if that's of interest. And we're working on an archetype assessment, so a reinvention archetype assessment. We're super excited to launch that in the new year, along with a short course as well. So it kind of feels like a capstone piece of work in my career so far, in the past 25 years. Sort of, I feel a bit like an inflection point myself. And it's just been a privilege to dig into this work and to wrestle it to the ground, as it were, and all in the hopes of bringing something practical that will help people through what can be a really disorienting, messy phase in their life that we can all expect.
So, you know, let me ask this. What do you think, or how does this impact leadership? You know, whether it be a person, you know, newly stepping into the leadership or a leadership role, mm-hmm. or an individual who maybe doesn't even necessarily see themselves as a leader. Maybe, you know, those individuals on the outside that work with them and know them see mm-hmm. it, they don't see it. What would you have to say as far as that?
Sure. So on the latter part, I think we believe the same thing, Jacqueline, which is leadership at all levels. And leadership starts with leading yourself. Good luck trying to lead other people if you're not leading yourself. We've probably come across circumstances where that's been the case, and it has been less than a positive experience. But those folks who are truly leading themselves are very powerful leaders. They are authentic leaders. It's not power, it's authenticity. It's this quiet, in some ways it's difficult to describe, but you know when you're in the presence of it, and that's somebody leading themselves authentically. They're grounded in their purpose. They lead according to their values. They've done the work unpacking the challenges, so they're not repeating the same challenges over and over, and they're grounded in that regard. When it comes to reinvention and leadership, this is a skill set that I would love all leaders to have, because we're talking about unleashing potential. The Gallup organization conducts ongoing research in employee engagement. And the figures, the data, it's pretty startling. Typically, there are some variations, of course, but typically 2/3 of employees are either disengaged or actively disengaged at work.
Say that again.
Two-thirds,
okay.
Of employees are either disengaged or actively disengaged in their work.
Okay.
And if we do the math on that, 5 billion-ish people on the planet working in some way, shape, or form, that's 3 billion people disengaged during majority of their waking hours.
Wow. That's pretty deep.
Yeah. So if you're leading an organization, I would love all leaders to ask themselves, what am I doing to help unleash the potential of the people who work here? Mm-hmm. There is this clarion call for innovation, disruption, innovation, transformation. But companies don't innovate. People innovate.
Right.
Companies don't change. People change. And there is so much untapped potential. I would love to make a dent on that with this reinvention work, where if you start to ask people sometimes they'll question what's your purpose. That can seem really heavy. Like, you know, I have no clue. What do you mean purpose? It can get really heavy really quickly. But, you know, asking yourself the question, you know, what are you curious about? What's the kind of work you're doing where time seems to fly? What projects do you see here you'd like to be involved in? What would you like to do more of, less of? What are your talents and strengths? Because when you're working with your strengths, near perfect performance is possible. If you're working with your weaknesses, the most you're ever going to get is mediocrity.
Okay.
So really getting clear on your own strengths as a leader, and what are the strengths of my people? And how might I help them develop those strengths and organize this work differently so that, you know, at the end of every year, that person has built skills, they're ever more employable, that they're really tapping into what's possible, as opposed to, I've worked another year in this job, I might have 5 years experience, but it's 1 year repeated 5 times. There's no material gain there doing that for 5 years. But 5 years of trying something new, following what I'm curious about, contributing to the organization in a different way. There's a great example. One of the folks that we interviewed, she was a communications director in a really large organization. And she was brought in a project. She said at the time she was starting to feel like, you know, this job used to be exciting, and I still, you know, I still like it, but I'm starting to think, is there something else maybe out there? Just starting to get those little, you know, taps on the shoulder of, you know, is this it, or might there be something else? And she was brought into a project, and it was a communications project, but she spoke to some of the folks on the front line. She said, I don't know what this is, but it's not a communications issue.
Okay.
It turned out there were some, it was a utility company, there were major challenges on the line. And whatever the new process was, the folks working on the line were breaking this down for her and saying, the way this is set up, we fear that somebody might get killed on this line because of this whole new process, the way it's set up, here are the flaws. So she spoke with a mentor. And the mentor said, this sounds like you need change management. You need folks to really start to think about this in a different way. And that just piqued her interest. You know how you hear something, and it's not something that's been on your radar, but that sounds interesting. I don't know anything about it, but let me go off and Google it. So she Googled it, found out there's this whole body of work on this thing called change management. And she got certified in change management. Fast forward a number of years, and 30 people in the organization are certified in change management. Wow. That's a phenomenal example of one person following their own breadcrumbs and how that could impact the growth of an organization. It was a very long-winded answer to your question.
So, you know, and it's like, I try not to interrupt, but I'm hoping that I can remember what it is I want to ask. Initially, when you first started talking, I was asking, how does your work like fit into, or you know, how does it intersect, I guess, leadership and your work and, you know, human behavior and things of that nature. And I know you initially started off by talking about leading yourself and you talked about authenticity. And I wanted you to, and you hit a couple of pieces, but I wanted you to talk a little bit more. Well, two things. I wanted you to talk a little bit more about, elaborate more, shall I say, on that authenticity piece and, and you know, leading yourself and leading others. And I also wanted to ask, how does that, have you struggled with that at all in terms of, well, Okay, see, this is what happens when I get going. So these are kind of multiple questions, kind of all lumped into one. So when did you first begin to consider yourself a leader? And did you yourself possibly have some challenges in leading through your authenticity or walking, you know, in feeling completely, feeling completely showing up as the best version of yourself, but what's best for you, you know, with your own values and your own beliefs? Or has that not always been the case? Has that been something that you had to learn how to do?
Mm-hmm.
So if that makes sense, if you could just kind of lump those all together and answer those for me.
Absolutely, yes. And I love the lumping together. It's all part of one big beautiful.
Because everything is interconnected, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So authenticity as a leader, it's, I don't know how you lead an organization these days without being authentic.
Okay.
And it can be one of the most challenging things to do.
Okay.
So there are different definitions of authenticity, being your best self, your real self. But that automatically brings up, well, which self are we talking about here? 14-year-old Jacqueline, 34-year-old Jacqueline, 78-year-old Jacqueline, you know, which self are we talking about? And the reality is we are ever evolving. You're not the same person today that you were yesterday. So it's holding this sense of self lightly. And within that, I love that it's a Carl Rogers definition of authenticity, where he talks about being the author of your own life. So we are the author of our own life. The question is, do you understand the narrative so far? Have you learned what the narrative has taught and can teach you? And how might you design, how might you build what you would like to see next? With the humility that, you know, we plan and God laughs. So you can plan and, you know, a lot's outside of your control. But a lot is within your sphere of control, the decisions that you make and the choices that you make. So in the course that I teach, Authentic Leadership, one of the most impactful exercises that participants give feedback on is something called the life map. You might be familiar with this, where you ask someone to chart their life, the peaks and the valleys to date. And that's just incredibly rich material to unpack. Oftentimes, the real learning takes place in those valleys. Oftentimes, that the peak was as a direct result of what you learned in the valley. Sometimes people say, oh, I'm seeing a valley repeated here. Maybe there's a lesson that I haven't learned. I'm being invited to learn again. So there's so much there. And yes, to your question, I have struggled with that. I have definitely struggled with that. I sometimes joke, and in many ways it's not a joke, I'm a recovering control freak perfectionist. It's all about how much can I control, set in place, manage, to a guaranteed outcome. And it's exhausting. That's an exhausting way to be in the world. So I've had to learn that lesson. And in my one of my earlier leadership opportunities, I was managing a number of folks, and I was a year older than they were, a year more experienced than they had. And the imposter syndrome that I had was pretty off the charts. So I went into a control and compliance mode, which is not helpful. So I learned by making a lot of mistakes. And a resource I would highly recommend is anything that Linda Hill has written on becoming a new manager. She is a professor out of Harvard Business School. And when she talks about, you know, the myths that a new manager comes into the job with, I had all of them, you know, I think it's compliance, I think it's keep the trains running, all of that. And she really helps to shift the frame to a much more productive place, which is know you're here to help lead change. You're here to bring out the best in these people. It's a reorientation, which took me years to really get my head around. And it, again, it hasn't been smooth sailing by any stretch, and I've made mistakes. But you asked, when did you consider yourself a leader? I don't know if I have yet. You know, I don't know if I, there are many different ways I could frame it, but I still feel something that's okay. I'm getting there, still learning. What might that look like? The closest that I think I am to it right now is, and my business partner, Jenny, is phenomenal at this, finding talent and helping them discern where do they love to play, and then finding a place for them to play here. So whenever I'm working with folks, if I can find out what their gears are, I can find out what do they love to do and how do they like to do it. You know, some right down to the nitty-gritty of, I like to think out loud, so could we meet for 30 minutes? Or, no, I need time to prep, and then I will share my ideas once I've had a day or two to think about it. So really digging into what makes people tick, that has been, I think, one of the most helpful leadership strategies that I've seen work and that I would recommend for others as well, which gets back to all of this reinvention work. You know, who are the people? What is the work that they're here to do? How can you help them do that?
You know, I'm a therapist, and, you know, working, you know, social worker, been a social worker, licensed social worker since, like, well, I'm dating myself, for since 2001. And that's a lot of the work, is actually looking at people's, well, what is it called? In our field, it's called a strengths-based perspective. But really, that's just looking at people and their abilities, their capabilities, their basically their strengths. What have they done thus far that has been working? Mm. You know, no matter how messed up, if you will, a person's life is, right? Because people don't typically come and see me when things are flowery and rosy and everything's great. That's just, you know, the realness of it. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, they've managed to survive. You know, so what resources have they utilized? How have they been adaptable? How have they been resilient? And actually drawing their attention to those things, you know, helps to obviously involve them in the process, because it's their life. And at that point, they're able to have a sense of, well, wow, you know, I do have some choices. I do have some strengths, something to And, you know, and they're able to be a part of that process and actually come up with the different things that they need to do, you know, that they need to do and how they're going to get it done and what resources they have around them. But kind of, I mentioned all that to say, just to kind of piggyback on when you talked about strengths and weaknesses, thinking about ideally, I totally agree that a leader should, an effective leader should know, you know, on his team, you know, basically what a person's strengths are, what their weaknesses are, you know, what motivates these individuals, right? You know, because everybody's motivated by something different. So it's like, I think we can both agree on these things. I think most people can agree on these things, but it doesn't necessarily, I'll put it like this. I don't think I've ever had a leader or a boss or supervisor in my life that has actually utilized that. That has actually,
really?
You know, so,
wow.
So Wow. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening are probably going to be like, yeah, me neither. Or maybe the leaders themselves, and they haven't quite tapped into that. So I guess I think we're both in agreement about that. But why do you think that doesn't, or no? Well, let me ask you, are you in agreement with me that you feel that oftentimes in, you know, corporate America, in the workplace in general, that is not utilized, or that's not, I don't know, maybe taught to the superiors? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I guess we have to start there first. Maybe you disagree with me.
No, I agree. And the reason why I agree is I teach a course for new managers. And there is a module there on motivating your employees.
Okay.
And I ask folks, you know, hypothetically, pull out your yellow pad or whatever, write the names of the people on your team down the left-hand side of the paper, and let's draw several columns. Okay. Short-term career goals, medium-term, long-term career goals, strengths, areas of development. Could you complete that quick spreadsheet? Could you fill that out? And the vast majority of managers say no, like maybe with a couple or a little bit, but no. And that's your key to motivate, develop, and grow your people. If I know that I have had the benefit of a number of really great managers, and I had a manager who had this conversation with me, okay, Julie, short, medium, long term, what are the career goals? I said, right now, I really want to improve my workshop facilitation skills. I feel like I come with my PowerPoint deck and I'm just talking at people. I would like to get more participation, more real learning happening. And she said, would you like me to sit in a couple of your workshops and give you feedback? And I said, sure. Now, in absence of that conversation, if she had said, Julie, do you mind if I sit in any of your workshops? My head would be off down a track of, does she not think I'm good enough? What, you know? And furthermore, the feedback she would give wouldn't have been helpful, because what she said prior to sitting in was, what do you want me to give you feedback on? And I gave her what I wanted feedback on. It was the first time I was looking forward to receiving feedback. The feedback was helpful, and I built serious skills that year. So it is not as common as it could be. And a lot of organizations have a performance management process. It's the end of year review. It's sort of that time of year. And an employee's experience of that runs the continuum of, this is a complete form filling exercise and a waste of my time and my manager's time, to, this is the culmination of a year's conversations about my growth and development. And it's exciting and interesting. And we're all getting something out of it, as is the organization. That's a continuum, and I would love to see a lot more conversations over here.
I'm sitting here and I'm thinking how just you even mentioning that when you got the feedback, you were welcoming that feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. thinking about how many times I've had a performance eval. Mm-hmm. And I'm going through it, and I'm like, you know, I'm kind of, you know, because it's just this, it's this feeling of, you know, it's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, or whenever we go and we sit in meetings, it's always about what we're not doing right, or what we're missing, how we're missing the ball, you know, things of that mm-hmm. nature. And, you know, oftentimes you're not told some of the things that you guys are doing right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking about even extending that to, like, how you said, if you kind of change the whole conversation around that, that could be a real tool. And I know that that's what it's meant to be, but a lot of times it doesn't play out that way. But that could be a real tool where that individual is actually looking for that feedback. And that not only improves their performance there on that job, mm-hmm. you know, that will improve just their overall, their just learning a new skill. You know, mm-hmm. when continue to use it for the next, I don't know, 5-10 years with that employer, whether you take it to another corporate office, whether you take it to your own business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a very useful skill, you know. Now, let me ask to say again, like I said, I'm off and running. So do you feel that you have learned a lot from individuals that you supervise?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say.
I'd forgotten about this until you said it, and I might cry again. I remember one performance review with a woman I had hired, and she was phenomenal. She was fearless. Like, she was inspiring. She would try stuff and want the feedback and then try something else. And she was so inspiring. And I remember I was in tears in her performance review when I gave her the feedback, telling her what an inspiration she was and the impact that she had on me and the team. And could she just continue to fly her bright colors? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been able to hold back either, because I'm getting a little teary-eyed now. Wow. And that's, you know, learning is ongoing, you know, mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we say that, but when it comes to actually practicing it, you know, sometimes we get so, you know, myself included, other individuals I've talked to, you know, we get so caught up in remaining in our comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's like we're saying one thing, but our actions aren't really following. But it mm-hmm. sounds like that young lady was really truly learning, mm-hmm. you know, as an opportunity to learn and grow as a person, you know, mm-hmm. which is really what you would hope, you know, that everyone would do. You know, because even, I'll leave it there, because I want to give you a chance to, you know, chance to talk. But this is very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Well, thank you for sharing everything, or just even you know, coming on the show. So, is there anything right now that maybe you want to piggyback on or kind of pick up that was already mentioned before? You know, I ask a different question.
Mm-hmm. Let me think.
Okay.
I'm going to speak to something okay. from the reinvention research.
Okay.
Which struck me. So we distill these four, we're calling them adaptive abilities.
Okay.
And I think this is what the environment that we're all in right now, that we're being invited to develop. We've all just gone through, the entire global population has gone through a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
The wars that are happening right now, the divides are getting ever deeper. Mm-hmm. And the abilities that we identified are wisdom, focus, persistence, and courage.
Okay.
And they're under the umbrella of human reinvention. And I think these are just life. You mentioned lifelong learning. There is no end point. I don't know if you saw back in the 1990s, I'm dating myself here, but with all of the quality movement, there used to be these posters, quality has no finish line. Well, learning has no finish line. These four abilities have no finish line. But wisdom is all about self-reflection and understanding your values, understanding if you're familiar with it and know it, what your purpose is, what's meaningful to you, what you're curious about, and really the sense of self-leadership, mm-hmm. that I'm responsible for my own choices, my own actions. I'm not responsible for everything that happens to me, but I am responsible for what happens next, responsible for what I do and what I say. So that's wisdom. Focus is all about proactivity. Are you doing something? Are you identifying the goals? Are you going for what's meaningful to you? So wisdom is a bit more self-reflection, focus a bit more action. Okay, self-reflection is great. Now you need to go do something. And then persistence is all about there will be challenges. So how do you build resilience? And even reframing those challenges from, instead of this is happening to me, if this is happening for me, what is it teaching me? What's right. the lesson? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth ability is courage. Okay. And that's all about embracing risk and navigating uncertainty. And I think this is in many ways our biggest opportunity for growth.
Okay.
Because we're essentially raised for the most part in an education system that gears us towards predictability. You know, get good grades, go to college, get a good job. That deal no longer works for the majority of people. One would argue it never did. So this whole sense of go for the safe option, go for the predictable option, what's guaranteed. Instead, what if we learned like really early on how to embrace risk and how to navigate uncertainty?
Okay.
Not in a way that endangers children's lives. I have a 6-year-old, so I'm very much against that. Yeah. But how to build that muscle. Mm-hmm. Because it feels like a lot of us build a muscle of fearing risk and avoiding uncertainty.
You say fearing risk and avoiding uncertainty. Okay. Mm-hmm. Agree with that.
And we need to do the opposite. So it's those four abilities that would enable and help a leader to lead, that ideally a leader would be helping others to develop. Mm-hmm. So, and again, so much of the conversation organizations these days are around how do we embrace disruption and innovate? Well, if you're innovating, you will be failing on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Because if you're innovating, you're trying stuff and you have no idea if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. If you know if it's going to work, that's not innovating. Mm-hmm. That's replicating what works, which is valid. But let's be clear, it's not innovating. So those four abilities, I love that they're succinct. It's a lifetime's work in progress to learn them. And what if organizations help these 5 billion people build those four adaptive abilities?
Right. Hmm. Wow. That's a lot. You've said quite a bit there, within the last couple of minutes. So I'm just trying to think of how do we want to wrap up? So because you've given us so much good information, so let's do this. Let's end this way. What piece of advice would you give that, you know, immediate actionable step, mm-hmm. you know? So want it to be you know, too overwhelming, but what would you say would be maybe 2 to 3, you know, actionable, feasible steps that one can take, mm-hmm. become a better leader, mm-hmm. and like whether it's in their corporate job, in their life, and or their business. Mm-hmm. End on that note. What would you say?
So I would speak to leadership at all levels.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be so much advice as here are some questions to ask yourself.
Okay.
As we wrap up this year and think about another year. And these are a few of my favorite coaching questions. So the first one is, what are you tolerating in your life right now? Don't overthink it, just do your brain dump. Get that down on a piece of paper.
Okay.
And then ask yourself, what would I like to create? And note those answers. And then ask yourself, and these words are important, what would be a fun baby next step? Because when our brain goes to, this is what I want, oftentimes the inner critic comes up with 10 reasons as to why you shouldn't, or that's a crazy idea, the whole internal monologue with which you're very familiar. So just calm all of that down, nod your head, and say, I understand that. Thank you for the feedback, inner critic.
One of these, like, okay, I got it, you know.
Got it, you're good. Stay in the passenger seat. What would a fun, tiny baby step look like? Okay. And all of that to say, I'm a massive believer in being uncompromising in your vision for your life and entirely flexible as to how you get there. And understand the cumulative impact of tiny steps taken with consistency over time.
Okay.
Go for what you really want, make it fun and doable. Okay. Start there.
I like that, make it fun and doable. Okay. I think that gives, just, could you just repeat it one more time? Just you gave us three steps, was it, right?
So the three questions, what are you tolerating in your life right now?
What are you tolerating? Okay.
What would you like to create?
What would you like to create?
What would a fun baby step be? Next step.
Okay. Okay. I think a lot of people could probably answer what they're tolerating.
Mm-hmm.
It may get a little stuck on what is it? What is a baby step of something fun that you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of women I talk to, they've raised children, mm-hmm. you know, they've been married, you know, maybe they're not married anymore. You know, just keeping it real. And they're like, okay, what am I gonna do now? You know, so mm-hmm. that might be a little challenging. So that gives them something to work with.
Yes.
You know, and you don't have to do it all in one sitting. You know, mm-hmm. there's no right or wrong. It's just something for you to think about.
Well, I love that you brought up, like, the woman who's thinking, well, I don't know. Because mm-hmm. a lot of us are in that space where we're thinking about other people and their needs, and maybe done that for years, decades. Me, I don't know. Oh, I don't know. So, first of all, meet yourself with compassion. And this is where your body can really teach you. And getting out of the headspace,
okay.
and just getting quiet. And maybe a more helpful question in that example would be, what would my heart like a little more of?
Okay.
What would my heart like? And go there. And it might be sit down and have a cup of tea.
I was just thinking about ice cream.
Or ice cream, even better. The dishes can sit in the sink.
Right.
The vacuuming can wait. The 150 emails can wait right now. Sit.
Mm-hmm.
And rest. If you're in a depleted state, it's really challenging to think, what will I create? I don't know. I've got a list of 55 other things that are taking up my mental bandwidth right now. Mm-hmm. So resting a depleted body might be exactly what's needed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Julie. This was great. Wow, this is great. A lot to think about. So with our remaining time, let the audience know how they can connect with you. They want to reach out to you.
Absolutely. So our website is academicleadershipgroup.com. And the website for the reinvention keynotes that I'm giving is futurefocusedhumans.com. And you'll find email addresses and contact forms there. You can also look me up on LinkedIn. I think there's only one Julie Jungawala. My maiden name was Wilson. There were lots of Julie Wilsons, but if you do a search on LinkedIn, you'll likely find me there. Please do connect. That's the platform that I'm on the most.
Okay. Good. I was going to ask you that. Okay. So you're mostly on LinkedIn because there's just so much out there, you know, but we can't possibly be active on all of those different platforms equally. So, okay, so LinkedIn. Okay, good. And your website. Excellent. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. It really has. And, you know, let's definitely stay in touch. Definitely stay in touch.
I would like that. Thank you, Jacqueline.
So definitely reach out to Julie if anything has, you know, interested you, or, you know, you want to work with her, or just, you know, just to stay in contact to find out what she has coming up next. You know, definitely connect with her on LinkedIn, or I guess go to her website, check it out. They could probably send you a message that way too as well. Right?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
All right. Well, wonderful. All right, Julie. Well, thanks again. And I will talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Take good care.
All right. You too, Julie. Bye-bye. Wow, wasn't that awesome? Awesome, awesome show. So again, I'm Dr. Jacqueline Kabah-Harrison, and this was the Born to Lead docuseries that I'm doing for probably the next couple of months. I have a few, I have quite a few entrepreneurs, influencers, coaches, consultants that are lined up and that are eager to share with you some of their successes, some of their, let's say, pitfalls or maybe things that they could have done differently. But the idea is that I want you to stay inspired. I do not want you to give up. You have come too far. And whenever you attend a session, I want you to grab your notepad and a pen and make sure you jot down these ideas, okay? Because I want you to begin working on it. You know, next year, we blink, 2024 will be here, and I want you to begin to work on these steps and begin to work on your leadership skills in general, okay? And that way you can show up as the best version of yourself. You can definitely increase or achieve whatever your short-term, long-term goals are, personal, professional, or leadership goals. Okay, so definitely make sure, if you have not done so already, make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is A Queen's Roundtable channel. I believe it is on YouTube, A Queen's Roundtable channel. So I'm not going to be broadcasting live on LinkedIn or Facebook anymore. It's going to be strictly on YouTube. So make sure you subscribe so that way you can be the most up to date. Or have the most up-to-date information and be able to tune in, catch us live. Also, each interview will be available on demand on the Women Win Network, which streams on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. Okay? So, and if you are interested in also being interviewed or any other visibility opportunities, definitely connect with me via email, which is Realizing Your Potential, the numbers 123.com. Or either my website, Realizing Your Potential, 123.com, or you can follow me on Facebook as well as LinkedIn under Dr. Jacqueline Kabah-Harrison. I'm on IG too, but I'm not on there as much. But thanks again, and make sure you tune in next time. All right, thank you, everyone, and take care.